Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Hello, Outriders. This week I've been finding out about a new news and satire site, why people might enjoy an evening of recreational maths, and a further explanation of why mathematics appears in literature and film. To kick off, let's find out more about the latest news and humour site doing the rounds. Us vs. Them picks up humour as quickly as it is tweeted, not only curating the funny as it appears, but also creating new material to make us smile. Rob Manuel is the editor of Us vs. Them and has a background in both the curation and creation of funny things online as the co-founder of Beta.com. He told me more about the new venture.
And the purpose is to amuse and entertain, and it's quite fun because we've been given the opportunity by Trinity Mirror, and they're being very experimental, and we've got a little team together. And we're playing, we're having fun, we're seeing what works. It's like 2001.
It's a good investment and an unusual investment, given that we're taught that newspapers are on the run, they're cutting down on things, they're not experimenting. What actually brought this idea to the forefront?
Well, inside Trinity Mirror, there's been some talk about innovation and doing ideas quickly. The idea came about that why don't we do an idea and do it quickly, but not sort of like gamble the big kind of news organisation on that, but like start something new and run it differently, run it like you run a web project instead of like how you run a newspaper. And if that succeeds, then you can like look at the lessons from that and see how they could be implied internally within the organisation.
What is the tone? What sort of content are you working with?
We're working with humour. It's a little bit BuzzFeed, a little bit Huffington Post, a little bit the background from the stuff I've done in Beta, a little bit Metro. You know, it's just having fun with internet culture.
How often are things published? Is this every day, all through the day?
At the moment, we're publishing like 6 to 8 items every weekday, and we're looking to double that in 2 months.
And so does this stand aside then from Trinity Mirror branded news pages?
Yeah, it's a completely independent product in terms of how it looks and how it feels, but obviously it's being funded by Trinity Mirror. The way we're looking to do it is for it to not, yeah, it's not say, it shouldn't really look like the Mirror. But we're looking at different advertising models because, you know, if you look around, you know, traditionally on the internet, the stuff that you've got like banner ads and people tune them out and they don't work. And some of the stuff that seems to be working at the moment is, like, you look on Twitter and they have their little tweets that are inserted, the sponsored tweets. And BuzzFeed, they basically write their same content that they normally do, and then they have it sponsored, and they don't run any banner ads. And so it's also a way to experiment with those advertising models, as well as about, you know, the humour to give and share with the audience.
It seems very fast moving as well. I guess you're generating your own stuff as well as looking at stuff that appears online. How do you scope what's, I guess, a kind of, it's like an instant zeitgeist online, what's happening right now?
Absolutely. Well, we've gone through a few different kind of experimental models. Like the day we started, we were trying to do it like a very sort of kind of a comedy workshop thing, where we got into the office and we had like this kind of huddle where we were looking through the papers and going, what can we do that's funny about this and what's funny about that? And we tried that for a few days and we realised it pushed us about 24 hours behind the news cycle. And so it meant that we made jokes that were just irrelevant. And then we realised the obvious thing to do and what we could all do before we came together was that you just sit on Twitter and riff about what's going on and try and be very reactive and leap on it. And I felt by Thursday last week we'd sort of moved on and turned that around, because we were, to use a ridiculous comparison, Duran Duran made an album called Seven and the Ragged Tiger. And what they meant by that, there were 7 of them, 5 members of the band and 2 managers. And the Ragged Tiger was this kind of like escaping thing of success and fame. And they were trying to grab hold of it and ride it, see where it's going. And that's what we're trying to do at the moment, is grab hold of the zeitgeist and see where it goes. And on Thursday, I felt it was really strong, because there was like 2 moments where we had things first. It was really exciting to be able to get some stories first and then see them pan out on the internet, you know, and we made that happen.
Is this something that news satire could do with taking into account? I mean, there are radio programmes like News Jack had people sending stuff into them, and you know, you've got weekly roundups on there like the Now Show, but also Have I Got News for You, but they end up looking back over a week. Do you think that people's taste for remembering what was funny earlier in the week is still there, or that we're all getting a shorter attention span?
Well, I think that there's a fundamental difference between a roundup radio show and what we're doing, simply because a lot of the way people absorb that radio show is push media. And like, if it goes out on Radio 4, you're guaranteed a certain audience, or on BBC Two or whatever the channel. Whereas we have no audience unless we drag them in. And the best way to drag an audience in is by doing something current and now. It's difficult to make people care about a roundup if it's something that's got to be passed on to their friends. Look at this roundup of links from a week ago. It doesn't sound very compelling. Whereas, look what's happening now is compelling. I don't know if you could do that. It'd be very difficult to do that with a news show or a comedy show in a traditional organisation, because of all the lawyers that would be poring over it and all the managers that would be saying, oh, yes, let's push this upstairs, and all the compliance. It'd be very, very hard to do.
When it comes to the value of something that you've posted, say, on Tuesday, mm-hmm. and as we've just mentioned there, the speed at which the internet works, do you find that people are still referencing back to jokes that you've been making based on news stories?
I think things die on the internet overnight. It's just dead the next day. Whatever it was, you wake up and there's a new joke and it's gone. And we're reflecting that in the design of our website. You know, there's no navigation. There's just page down, read the old item, go away when you get bored. You know, I mean, obviously you could find something if you search for it, but people don't care. It's gone.
So if people want to come and find you then, and indeed follow the jokes, what's the best way to follow something that moves that quickly?
Well, you can go to our website, which is us versus them and them with a 3.com. You could follow our Twitter account. If we're doing it right, you could just hang out on Twitter and hopefully you'll be getting some of our content in your feed.
Now from news to mathematics, because that's how we roll on Outriders. If you have a fear of maths, worry not. We're not going to ask you to submit quadratic equations for this edition, but something interesting is afoot at the National Museum of Mathematics in New York, and if you're lucky enough to be over that way, you might find that it can show you a side of maths that is more fun than you remember from long lessons at school. Glenn Whitney is the co-executive director, and he told me more about the museum and why recreational maths is not as scary as it might sound.
People see a really narrow cross-section of mathematics in their typical school years, and there's so much more that people can enjoy, and that's what we try to show in the museum.
Now, I understand also that you run an event which has recreational mathematics. Now, I know there will be a section of the audience to which the idea of that might make them want to cry a bit if they're not necessarily maths fans, but the idea of recreational maths can be quite fun.
Oh, absolutely. And I think probably most of your listeners have tried their hand at a pseudo puzzle, or maybe what we call crypto quotes, where there's some famous quotation and all the letters have been changed around. Or maybe they've played dominoes or chess or checkers or any of a number of games like that. And there's mathematics that can help you understand those different activities, that can help you be better at those different activities. And that's really what we mean by recreational mathematics.
So what exactly happens at one of your recreational mathematics nights?
In August, we have a whole conference devoted to recreational mathematics. So there'll be mathematicians from all over the country coming to tell people about new mathematical principles that they've discovered that relate to some, you know, game or sport or recreational activity. Then we'll also, you know, along with that, we will have some math movies.
What is a maths movie?
Well, of course, there's some classic ones. For example, Good Will Hunting is a movie that had math at the core.
When you look for speakers at the events like your conference, I mean, obviously it's great to have people working on new mathematical theories, but are they also able to bring this to a level where, I guess, regular people who don't necessarily dive too deeply into mathematics on a daily basis can understand how inspiring it can be?
Absolutely. And in fact, this particular conference, the MOVES conference, has what we call a research track, so people telling us about new mathematical theories, but has what we call the family track. We want to encourage people to bring, you know, their whole family and have this be an event sort of for everyone. We've been looking specifically for mathematicians who can share some of the joy of recreational mathematics to people without having a math background.
Naturally, I should imagine that a great deal of your time is taken up running a fantastic museum, but do you have a specialist area of mathematics that you particularly like, a theory or indeed a sequence that you like best?
I am formally trained as a mathematician, which means that I spent the years of my life studying one particular area of math, and so I think it's fair to say that that's my first love, mathematical logic. So, you know, understanding how it is that we, you know, derive one mathematical truth from another, build up theories that will hang together without any contradictions. And then it shades into theoretical computer science because, after all, you know, computers are machines that take one predetermined step after another in a very orderly or logical sequence. So that study, you know, can start to tell you something about, you know, how these marvelous machines that we built, how do they work? What are the limits of their power?
So if we want to look up some more information, or indeed if we're in the right place at the right time to come to the conference, where can we find out more?
So you can find out general information about the museum at our website, which is momath.org. And information specifically about the conference is at moves.momath.org. And it will be August 4th through 6th in Manhattan between 5th and Madison.
Maths in Manhattan over the summer there. It sounds like a neat way to beat the heat. One thing that Glenn mentioned that had me thinking was that the museum will be showing maths in film. I asked you lot to tell me if you had a favourite maths movie, and what more should I expect but some very smart replies. On Facebook, Nick Butler says that he likes Pi for its travel into the irrational, and The Cube for some prime horror. I see what you did there. And on Twitter, Sam Burrows says, "The day the Earth stood still," as the alien leaves an equation as a calling card. I'm going to give an A for maths in film there, but I think the A with stars is going to Oliver Knill. Not only does he teach at the maths department at Harvard, but he's also been running a database of maths in movies since 2006. There you can find all sorts of treasures, some obvious and some hidden, in film. I asked him how he manages to find so many movies that feature mathematics.
It was quite easy because many have contributed to this. I have now about 160 suggestions, and I have not yet even processed. So it's mostly about the readers and the visitors who actually kind of make the suggestions. So I would never have come up with all these movies myself.
And so when you see mathematics being used in film, you're an expert, obviously, in the field. Is it tempting to work out if those equations that you're seeing are correct?
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of fun, because some of the movies, they have experts who have advised them, and they are great. I can use them in teaching. I've learned a lot from these movies myself, like methods for integration, and I teach that, and I can show that clip in the classroom. It's fantastic to have a real movie where it shows this. But some movies also kind of are a little bit, you know, over the top, that the math is not completely correct. And that's actually an interesting thing also to find. And that's why many, many teachers love it. You can see whether there's an error or if it's correct, and you can discuss this in the classroom. It's fantastic.
When it comes to using mathematics to teach, do you think this also helps people who might be struggling? I'm guessing not Harvard students who do mathematics, but I guess, you know, maybe people who had a bit of a rough ride when they did maths at high school and thought, oh, no, I'm never going back to this. I'm horrified. But in fact, it shows a different side to maths.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hugely popular, and, you know, math is both scary and beautiful for many. It's kind of a little bit like a horror movie. For others, it's like a beautiful art. So it is both sides, and this, I think, makes it attractive. And so, I mean, currently, I mean, it's about 500 visitors per day who visit that page, which is enormous. So just this year alone, there were 8 million hits, which is counting everything, every picture and everything which is loaded down, but 16,000 visitors, unique visitors in this year. That's just fantastic. And this shows the interest, and that many people are interested in math. And so it can make break a barrier and maybe interest some students in math which would otherwise not have been interested in.
Are there many films where the story or the narrative actually hinges on an equation? So indeed, to understand the story, you'd need to understand the maths.
Oh, there are some, yeah, which are more difficult, where the riddles, like Die Hard, where the riddles, you kind of have to understand the riddle, and or Fermat's riddle, which is has a lot of problems. And there are sometimes also hidden. It doesn't really matter whether you understand it, like Simpsons, the Treehouse of Horrors, where there is a counterexample for the Fermat's theorem. So this is, somebody has to show you that, otherwise you don't get it. There are lots of hidden places also. But it's not always crucial. I mean, most of the time, I don't think it's really crucial to understand the math. It's just part of the story and makes it maybe a little bit more intriguing. Like The Cube or Hypercube, these are horror movies where people are trapped in a cube or in a four-dimensional cube and they die horrible deaths. And so there's a lot of math involved and they have to get out of that. So there's it's scary, but it's also scary if you don't know the math.
Well, I'm guessing as mathematics transcends so many things around us that you could probably see mathematics in almost any genre of movie. I mean, as you mentioned there, horror, but so many different types of film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's probably in every movie there is something where you can take things out. I mean, there was just Star Trek, not in the new one, but in the earlier one, there's a scene where Spock is trained in mathematics in a kind of in a training lab run by computers, and there are some subtle things like the volume of the sphere or the dimension formula for fractals which appear, and it's fun to find that out. But it's very small parts, and they are not so important for the whole movie. But for mathematicians, it's interesting just to pick out these little moments, and I try then just to cut it out and put it on the website if I find something.
Do you have any particular favourites, whether it's correct maths or incorrect maths or horror films or whichever genre that you specifically like as an example of mathematics in film?
Oh, yeah, there are good ones. I mean, one of my favourite is It's a Mad, Mad World. It's a fantastic scene where they have to figure out how to split up the money. It's fantastic. It's not, I mean, it's just addition and division and things, but it's wonderful. There are some more advanced things like It's My Turn, where actually a lemma in algebraic topology is proven and correctly proven on the blackboard. That has been advised by a professional mathematician, actually a Harvard mathematician. So another thing which I like is the Fellini-Amarcord. It's about solving the quadratic equation. A student is standing in front of the blackboard and then they make a joke. They run a pipe from the back to the blackboard and they pee into that pipe, and then it looks as if the student in front of the blackboard was actually peeing in his pants. So it's a wonderful movie, but it has some I mean, the quadratic equation is there, and so one can enjoy also the math.
And so if people are looking for a fabulous resource for maths in film and they want to come and have a look at your site, where's best to find you online?
You can just Google Knill and then you get K-N-I-L-L and then you get to my website. It's very simple. There are also other resources, of course. There is now a nice book has come out of the authors Polster and Ross, who have written a book, Math Goes to the Movies, and it's great. There's lots of information there.
Now, Oliver has led us rather nicely there from movies into books. Maths in literature is more prevalent than you might think. Naturally, the web being a place where you can find all things, I didn't find it too hard to find someone who might point us at some nice fiction and mathematics. Alex Kassman is a maths professor at the College of Charleston in Charleston, South Carolina, and he has an amazing resource that points to maths in fiction. I asked him to tell us more about his work.
So as part of my job, what I'm paid to do, I'm a math professor, so I'm teaching math, I'm doing math research, but as a kind of hobby on the side, since 1999, I've been keeping track of appearances of mathematicians or mathematics in works of fiction, and I keep an online database that's now up over about 1,100 works of mathematical fiction listed that I think of as a resource for people who just are interested in reading that, or teachers or students who use it as an academic resource. I also have written some mathematical fiction. I teach a course in mathematical fiction. I review mathematical fiction. So, yeah, the phrase for the hobby, I guess, is mathematical fiction.
It sounds like an obsession. It's fantastic. When it comes to mathematical fiction, is the maths in the fiction factual? That's a bit of an odd equation, isn't it? But I think you see what I mean.
I just wrote a paper on that. Most of the time, the math in the fiction is barely even mentioned, so you can't address it. A lot of authors would like to include a mathematician, usually because they like the stereotype of the crazy antisocial math character, and they don't actually want to get into the math, so they'll barely say anything. Some people have heard a piece of actual mathematics that they found interesting and incorporate into a work of fiction. Tom Stoppard, for example, got caught up in the idea of chaos theory and fractals and wrote a play around it, Arcadia. And then the article that I wrote recently was on a different category, probably the most rare, in which the author has included fictional mathematics itself in the work. So the author writes about a work of mathematical discovery, a theorem, which they have created for the work of fiction. And I guess you need to know quite a bit about math in order to do that successfully, and also need to be pretty creative to do it interestingly. So that's the rare category.
Goodness me, how would one prove a fictional mathematical theorem?
Oh, well, no, I didn't mean to imply that they actually proved it. I can only think of one work of fiction in which there's a proved theorem. There's an episode of Futurama that contains a theorem that was proved for the episode because one of the writers of the show actually has a degree in math. But I was thinking more along the lines of coming up with a hypothetical theorem. It's like science fiction. You can write science fiction and write about a scientific discovery that hasn't actually happened without going out and actually doing it. Jurassic Park, for example, you can fantasize it. And it's difficult to fantasize a plausible theorem, but it does happen. And so that's one of my favorite things to find in a work of mathematical fiction is something that's potentially a mathematical discovery, but just proposed fictionally.
Do you have particular favorites that you like to go back to when it comes to finding maths in books?
Cryptonomicon was actually the novel that started off this whole hobby of mine back in 1999. I read it and I thought it was a great piece of propaganda for mathematics because basically, in a fun novel, it presents the idea that it was math that helped us win World War II and that laid the foundation for the modern computer age. And so my thought at that time was, wow, if I could just get a bunch of works of mathematical fiction like this and present them to people, they'd learn how to appreciate mathematics as much as I do. It didn't work out quite as I expected in two ways. One was that I thought there would only be a few works. I never imagined I'd be doing this still after I'd passed 1,000 works on the list. And the other was I ended up getting a lot more focused on the works of fiction that have a view of mathematics I don't appreciate rather than the ones that I think would make great propaganda.
Is that a problem then in the sort of fictional trope, the crazy mathematician? But in fact, I mean, most of the mathematicians I've spoken to seem very pleasant and have everything quite together.
Yes, absolutely. That's a concern of mine, especially in film, even more so than in written fiction. There's the impression one gets that mathematicians at best are antisocial and at worst are dangerously, homicidally insane. I would argue, and you seem to agree with me, that this is a misrepresentation. Maybe it's debatable. I don't have the statistics to prove that it's not true, but like most stereotypes, I think people end up focusing on an example or two. For instance, John Nash is a mathematician, famous mathematician, who did have mental illness, and the film A Beautiful Mind is based on his life. But again, like with most stereotypes, people ignore the fact that there were many other brilliant mathematicians at the same time as him who didn't have any sort of issues. Similarly, there are, of course, people in other professions who had mental disorders. Film, however, created an impression. It even got to the point that when that movie was out, I walked outside my front door once and a neighbor of mine said she saw that film and now she understands how my mind works, which was an incredibly offensive thing to say. So I had to emphasize to her that I have the same job as that man, not the same mental disorder. But yeah, I think people did get the impression from I'll list a few movies. That one, then there's also Good Will Hunting. Both of those basically had the moral that it's better to have a life than to be a mathematician. And then there was the film Pi, which was a beautiful film. I really like it, but it had the moral that it's better to have a lobotomy than to be a mathematician. And so, yeah, I'm concerned about the misrepresentation of my profession in these works of fiction, both because of what it will make people think of me, and perhaps more so because I fear it will push people away from the career who might actually be good at it and enjoy it. I'm worried about the students.
That obviously doesn't do great PR for mathematics in general, and a lot of people, I'm guessing, if you offered them, would you like to read a maths book, may interpret this as a manual or instruction book of some sort. And if they haven't had a very good time of this, even at high school level, they're going to shy away from it. But are there works of fiction that might actually welcome people back if they've been a little bit put off or they've struggled somewhat with mathematics?
Yes, of course. There are works of fiction that are great at interesting people in mathematics, convincing students to study mathematics. Or I get a lot of email from adults who say, well, I've been out of school for so long now, I've forgotten all my math, I want to go back and learn some of it. And there's, let's see, the Number Devil, is a book that was written in German by Hans Magnus Enzensberger. And it's a wonderful book about a boy who himself dislikes math and is visited in his dreams by a number devil who convinces him that math is both interesting and useful than he previously thought. The Man Who Counted is a similar book. I think both of these were designed for children, maybe a certain ambiguity. It's at a higher level. It's for someone who's at least had some college mathematics. But again, yeah, I think for some people, having the characters and the plot are enough to pull them back into it and get them to push beyond what they might have been afraid to do when they were studying it in a textbook context.
Where's best to find you online?
Google and other search engines, I presume, recognize me. So if you just type mathematical fiction into your search engine, I should be there at the top, mathematical fiction homepage, and my name, Alex Kasman.
Thanks to Alex for pointing us at some of the great-sounding books that include maths. Not a bad start for some summer reading. But sadly, we've come to the end of another edition. However, if there's an electronic, web-based, or generally geeky topic that you'd like us to explore, then search for Outriders on the usual social networks and drop a line to let me know.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.